Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Phillies fans. For the last 3 days, you have been kicking, dragging, and screaming to be Red Sox fans. And they've done nothing but come through for you. Including today. The Red Sox were down 7-1 and beat the Braves 9-8. They scored 6 in the 8th inning to tie it. Then Freddie Freeman homered in the bottom of the 8th. And then Brandon Phillips, who the Red Sox just brought up after all those years with the Reds. He'd been in their minor league system with Pawtucket. They just brought him up. Hit a 2-run homer with Andrew Benintendi aboard, and the Red Sox won 9-8. The Red Sox have done more for the Phillies this week than the Phillies have done for the Phillies this week.
All right, Phillies, got to get it done tonight. You're going against a kid. It's his second major league start tonight for the Marlins in Sandy Alcantara.
All right. You know, I'm 2 days away from seeing the Marlins.
That's right.
When I go to see that game, I will tie Derek Jeter for most Marlins games seen this year.
Actually, you have a chance to go to 2 of them.
Yeah, I may walk. I mean, because we're so close, I may walk. I mean, I've got invitations. Paul Alexander wants me to come over and see him. I've got a lot of people.
On Saturday, you can get that bobblehead that Adam Bittner was talking about. So. No, or maybe not.
Are you insane? Oh, my goodness. Okay. Time for our play-by-play call of the day. Yadier Molina with 3 aboard.
The pitch, a swing, and a high fly ball. Deep left field. Back to the track. The wall. It's a grand slam for Yadier Molina on an 0-2 pitch. 11-5 Cardinals.
John Rooney with the call on the Cardinals Radio Network as Yadier Molina homers. It's always interesting because obviously the Spikes are a Cardinals affiliate. You know when the most movement happens is at the catcher position. If you know, the last couple of years he's had to go on the disabled list. Also, you see all these guys move up. Then he comes off the DL. They all move back down. We always get a kick out of that. You see who's carrying the Yankees right now offensively? Luke Voit. Former State College Spike. How about that? All right. Couple quick items. We got Le'Veon Bell and we got Nike. Okay. So let's start with Nike. All right. I think everyone knows by now, and I have not seen the commercial, but I guess Colin Kaepernick is in the commercial. In fact, he's the focal point of the commercial, I believe. Now, Colin Kaepernick has been under contract to Nike since 2011, but obviously they haven't used him often. So obviously this being the 30th anniversary of the Just Do It campaign, they want him to be the centerpiece of it. It's interesting that on social media people get riled up, maybe a little bit of water cooler conversation. But for the most part, nobody cares. I mean, let's be honest about it. You know, I mean, Sean, is there a depth of caring on your part? And Sue only cares because Nike won't do digital media with him, so he's mad at him to begin with.
Their loss.
There are three outcomes to this. Number one, you think it's really cool and it's good, and so you buy Nike gear. Okay. Number two, you're turned off by it. So you don't buy Nike gear, and if you're going to buy gear, you'll buy Adidas or Under Armour. Your choice. You're the consumer. You can buy what you want. Or number three, you either don't need anything, you don't really care, no commercials ever influenced you anyway, and you wear what you think is comfortable. I think in the last 40 years, to me, what's moved apparel more than anything else have been two elements. One, colleges and universities. I think they do more for moving apparel than anything else. That's why you see the contracts with Under Armour, Adidas, and Nike with universities, because they move gear. And the other factor is Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan and, you know, I mean, the Air Jordans. Right? Now today you've got the silhouette of him going up to dunk, the same one that they have in front of the United Center as a statue. You see a lot of people wearing that gear now. And to this day, Michael Jordan still moves apparel. He still moves gear. He moves sneakers. And he's done more than anybody else. I've always felt those are the two greatest influences on moving gear. Madison Avenue has a long litany of corporate successes in terms of advertising. Madison Avenue also has a long, long list of campaigns that didn't live up to expectations or failed. They have both. Let me give you one that is not apparel related, right? For years and years and years, you know, whether it moved any beer or not, it may have, was the most interesting man in the world with Dos Equis. Right? Would that be fair? I mean, the most interesting man in the world, I mean, they made you laugh.
I think without question, it's got to be right. The best ad campaign that Dos Equis ever had.
All right. So here's the problem. The actor got old. So they wanted to get they were determined they wanted a younger look. So they went with the younger look, and for whatever reason, just on maybe pure appeal or whatever, or because it's not the guy that people are used to, the ad campaign has not gone well for them.
No, now they have this new slogan, keep it interesante.
Well, now who do they have doing it? Steve Spurrier, the head beer coach.
Ah, so they did there. Okay.
No, but I'm just saying, so Dos Equis on the Madison Avenue scale with the most interesting man has this long list of successes. Then, through no fault of the actor, through no fault of anybody, they went younger, and it kind of lost its sizzle. So that's just the way the ad world goes. Nike put Colin Kaepernick on for one reason and one reason only, and please do not tell me it was to make a statement. Every ad is designed for one reason and one reason only. Sean, what is that one reason?
To make money.
Why? Yeah, exactly right. They think that this is a way to make more sales. So that's what they've done. Whether it is to make a statement to make you feel good about the company, whether it's to make a statement to make you feel strongly about the company, whether it is something fun to make you feel, the smile about the whatever it may be. They're trying to move product. So somebody at Nike has the idea that this will move product. Well, there's only one determining factor when it comes to moving product. Are you interested? Okay. I don't like what Nike did. I'm going to buy Adidas or Under Armour. I like what Nike did. I'm going to buy Nike. Or I care less, which, by the way, is the vast majority of America anyway, because not everybody's wearing this stuff. Okay. And like, I could care less what they run, whatever. I just get what I think is comfortable, and I go from there. That's about the three factors, right? I mean, is that fair? I think that's fair.
Sure.
You know? And I'm not making any political statement one way or the other. I'm just saying, look, they're putting the ad out for one reason. They want to make money. They think this is a way to make you feel strongly about the product and buy it.
Well, the particular size of shoe I need in the style. I mean, a lot of stores don't have what I need, so my feet can stay comfortable. Yeah. So yeah, watching a TV ad, that doesn't swing me in a specific direction.
All right. And the other part is, I mean, you're going to have people who don't like it. So they're going to go to Under Armour, or they're going to go to Adidas. Okay, or whatever it may be. Russell Athletic, whatever it may be. Okay, so you have some people that love it and go for it. Some that don't care about it but are still going to buy it. Some people are turned off by it completely, so they're not going to buy it. Or they weren't going to buy it anyway. Or there's some people going, I'm not buying anything. I'm not really interested. I could care less. It's not a commercial. I'm not swayed by people who are on commercials. I don't know about you. I've never bought anything based on the celebrity endorsement, but that's okay. I don't know what the sale of LeBron James shoes happen to be. I suppose they're pretty good. I've never seen anybody wear them.
So you mean those days when you were just getting out of college at Penn State and you saw Ricardo Montalban with those Chrysler Cordoba ads, you didn't have a temptation to go and go car shopping and get a Cordoba? Rich Corinthian leather?
I was driving an AMC Gremlin out of college.
with the bubble windows. Look at you.
No.
Oh, that's right. That was the Pacer.
That's right. No, it was a Pacer. So, man, that's what I was driving out of college. I was just glad whatever I had ran. I really didn't. I just sit there and go,
Deb's first car, the Renault Alliance.
Really?
Yeah.
About that. Now,
mine was a 64 Cadillac convertible, black, with tail fins.
I'm not surprised.
Well, the heat didn't work in the winter, though. That was the problem. So
that's kind of a bummer.
That could have been a deal breaker on Deb and I's first date. So, but luckily, it was in May. Luckily, it was in May and not in the winter. So.
aren't you smooth? Aren't you smooth?
Well, I thought it was.
I'm just saying. I think the Kaepernick ad has far more traction, eating up TV time on news shows, and has far more traction on social media. I think in the real world, the vast majority of the real world, could care less. It may draw interest to you watching it and you going, okay.
I just think there's a lot of people out there, as soon as they saw that picture of him tied in with Nike, there's got to be a lot of people out there saying, yep, and he still doesn't have a job in the National Football League.
Yeah, I mean, but those are the reactions you're going to get. My question is, does it push product? Nike did not put it out there to have you buy less. Nike put it out there for you to buy products. Okay? They didn't put it out there to be neutral. They're hoping that this campaign makes you say you want to buy it. Again, don't think there's any more noble cause than that, because there is not. Okay? Wait, am I wrong?
No, I don't think you are.
What the heck? All right. We'll take a break. We're going to talk about Le'Veon Bell next on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors. I mean, let's face it, what Nike's doing is they think it's a campaign that'll make money for them. That's why they're doing it. See, that's why there's a big difference between national advertising and local advertising. Gigantic difference. To me, local advertising is all about getting to know one-on-one your neighbor and what they have. In other words, we have Sunbury Motors. Well, Tom Mertz and the Sunbury Motors people, like, these are people I know, all right? No trust. Okay. Adam Purdy, Purdy Insurance. No trust. Corey over Brewers Outlet. No trust. Great. I mean, to me, the local stuff in advertising is exponentially different than the national stuff. And the local people are the ones you're going to be dealing with. They're the ones that you have to trust and build a bond with, and they bond with you and so forth. And you have product and brand loyalty.
And that's the key right there, what you just said, brand loyalty. I mean, there are so many great businesses that we work with week in, week out, year after year, and we're there to share their message, their brand. So, and a lot of goods and products and services you need at a moment's notice. So it's crucial to keep their message going all year long. So when it's time to make that purchase with that business, okay, yes, I heard about that on WKOK.
Right. I mean, it's... For example, we've talked about And how many of you dealt personally with Tom when it comes to a car? Man, he's right there, okay? And he's standing behind it all the way. Corey has great products over at his store, okay, at Brewer's Outlet. We, you know, Adam, we always tell the story about some being calling on the weekend saying, hey, I had a problem with a rental, all right? Am I covered? Yeah, you're covered. Just, you know, just take it easy, all right? My Nike shirt ripped. They're like, well, go buy another one, okay? It's like, it's good, okay? That's why big corporate, okay, versus local is a completely different ballgame. Okay, the, you know, when you're local, you got to stand behind everything you do because your name means everything. Okay, your name means everything. All right, Le'Veon Bell. I can hear the suit ranting right now over the money part of it. Can't you?
Okay. The other name I think of is Kirk Cousins, another player. Now, granted, this is a different position on the football field. I understand that completely, but you know, look what he did. He had to go through two franchise tags, and good things come to those who wait. Well, he was able to get a completely guaranteed contract. I'm not saying that Le'Veon Bell would, you know, honor this deal and then automatically get a guaranteed contract from another NFL team. I don't think that'll happen because of his position, where he plays on the field, and how old he is. But you know, you just think if you're going to leave a lasting impression to get that deal that you're looking for eventually, at least finish what you started, honor your deal, sign, and get in there. But they think, oh no, they're gonna rip the tires off of me, and it's like they're gonna run me into the ground.
Well, they've been running him into the ground. I mean, he's been averaging what 375 touches a year the last 2 years. Man, that's a ton. That's a ton. And that's why, to me, the biggest issue from the Steelers' point of view, and look, they created it because they're the ones that are running them. And Tyler Haley ran them and sent them out in pass patterns and more patterns and more patterns. And think about all the blitz pickups, okay? All the contact on blitz pickups. He's taken a lot of contact the last 2 years, especially. So now it does bring into play, what is the young man's shelf life? And that's the hardest part to determine. What is his shelf life? Is this a guy that 3 years from now, 4 years from now, is still humming along at this incredible pace, racking up these incredible numbers, or is it possibly starts to break down? Now, something else that really has hurt Le'Veon Bell is Le'Veon Bell has been suspended a couple of times. So he doesn't have a lot of collateral with the fans to begin with. Now, it's one thing to get hurt because, I mean, he's only had one, to my knowledge, I think he's only had, what, one really good playoff game. All the other playoff games, he was either hurt or didn't play well. So he's never been, except for one game, a big postseason performer.
Yeah, he was out quite a while a couple of years ago. There was a Steelers-Bengals home game. I believe it was toward the, it was either October or November. And he got tackled out of bounds by Vontaze Burfict of the Bengals, and he wasn't the same after that season.
Yeah. Well, he sat out the 1 year where they played the Ravens. He didn't play. They lost the game. Then they had a great game against Kansas City, but then right at the beginning of the game against the Patriots, got hurt, he went out. So he doesn't have great postseason history. So that does work against him. He's had a couple of suspensions. That works against him. You know, 375 touches a year, that works for him. But what is the guy's shelf life? And that's the toughest call for any management team to make. Does the guy have enough to fulfill whatever year you want to put tag on the contract? 5-year deal, okay? Can I get 3 or 4 really good years out of him? And here's the other part when it comes to leverage. Who would actually pay him? You have to have somebody out there you think is willing to pay him.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased to be joined for the Patriot News and PennLive.com, Bob Flanders. Hi, Bob. How have you been?
Steve, I'm doing great in this heat. Looking forward to the weekend in the Steel City.
Let me ask you about, obviously I travel a lot around the state. If I'm going to Western Pennsylvania, I'm going to hear a lot about the Pitt Series. The odd thing to me is that when I go east, I don't hear as much about it. It's like another game to at least some of the groups I've talked to. In Harrisburg, what does this game mean based on what you know?
Yeah, it really, I heard some other people talking about this as well. I think one of the reasons why you hear so much about it in Pittsburgh is because it always seems to me that, Pittsburgh people tend to stay in Pittsburgh and kind of take root there. I think that people maybe in the middle part of the state or in the eastern part of the state, maybe they move around a little bit more. I don't know if that's the case, but I always felt like the game meant a little bit more to the area of Pittsburgh than it did to the eastern part of the state, and definitely in Harrisburg. I mean, there are some older fans that are looking forward to the game just because of the atmosphere and because this should be a really interesting game, just like the game 2 years ago. But I do think that as far as a rivalry goes, if you don't remember the games in the 70s and the 80s, or you can't really look back on those memories, because those are some just tremendous games, and the talent on both sides of the field was incredible. You just don't really have the perspective of what it was like to watch those wars unfold.
Because to me, if you're 35 or younger, you don't really remember much about this series at all. It didn't really exist to you.
Yeah, but for 35 or younger, I think you're just more wrapped up in the Big Ten Conference and the Big Ten East, yeah, and Ohio State, what's going on out there? Is Jim Harbaugh going to survive? Is Penn State going to win at Michigan? I think those are the things that that demographic is looking forward to. And I think the crowd that's 50 and over, every time Pitt and Penn State play, they think back to what happened in the late 70s, the mid 70s, and the early 80s. Those games were just unbelievable. And Steve, in a way, it's kind of a shame that people don't know what they're missing. I mean, with the advent of YouTube and everything else, I really think if you love Penn State and you're a younger fan, I would take a couple hours and pick out maybe the 81 game, the 82 game, one of the games from the late 70s, and just watch it, because that is great football.
Yeah, between 74 and 83, it was great football between the two. Now, opening game, what were the pluses and what were the minuses that you saw in game one?
Well, I mean, let's start with the pluses. I do think obviously you have to give Penn State some credit there for the last two offensive drives that they had. The one where they had to go the length of the field, not the length, the one where they had to go about 50 yards after KJ's big return to tie the game. But they only had to go 50 yards, but that fourth and two play where Trace K hit Brandon Polk on that hitch for 10 yards. Mm-hmm. That wasn't an easy completion. I mean, it was a catchable ball, but Brandon Polk made a great catch. And then the approaching overtime, I love that, where they just stayed with the running game because you could tell Miles Sanders, A, was in rhythm and feeling it, and the offensive line was just getting off the ball. I think, you know, I don't think you can have a lot of issues, in my opinion, with Penn State's offense. You just can't. But, you know, if you just look back to last year, special teams was a big part of what Penn State did, especially early in games. Yeah, I mean, a 100-yard kickoff return, that just wasn't going to happen last year. Right. Blake Gillikin's a great weapon. Field position was always huge. And you're seeing, I think what you saw in week one was, you know, when you have to replace 8 starters and when a guy like John Reed has to shake off the rust, there is, as James Franklin talked about on Tuesday, there's a difference between practice and there's a difference between games. And he didn't see some guys playing as fast as maybe they've seen him in practice. I think all of that's true. Kevin Givens was obviously missed. I think that Jan Johnson will be a good linebacker. I'm not sure what his ceiling is, but he was still trying to figure some things out, I think, in his first start, and to be expected. And I think the freshman will get better. To me, the special teams I thought was really troubling, but those areas that they messed up I think are fixable. And on defense, they just need some people to kind of grow into their roles. And I think that Penn State will be better. And I think also Appalachian State, I don't know if they played their A game, Steve, because I think they might have played their A-plus game. I mean, they really, Penn State took their best shot, and give them a lot of credit. You know, I don't know how many times you've seen it. I haven't seen Penn State give a team, the crowd, a standing ovation as they come off the field, and that's what the Beaver Stadium crowd did to App State. That was rare.
I mean, that's the first time I've ever seen it, Bob.
Yeah, I can't remember it. I mean, I just think that I think Penn State fans were A, so relieved, but B, so surprised and flummoxed that this team was that good. I just think that they didn't really realize what they were seeing, and they could finally exhale. But I do think that App State really, really played a great game and very easily could have won it. Yeah. But you got to give Penn State credit when they absolutely had to make some plays on offense, they did it.
First three quarters, the defense gave up only 3 points, and I felt and made the observation to Jack Ham that I felt like every time Penn State got Appalachian State off schedule, a loss or a no gain, they then gained control of the possession. They never created that in the fourth quarter with 28 points. Why was that, in your opinion, in watching it, Bob?
Well, one of the things I noticed was, so there are a couple things in the fourth quarter that struck me. First of all, the quarterback, that quarterback, Zach Thomas, he took that shot from Lamont Wade in the second half, and I didn't think he was going to – that was a nasty shot, and I didn't think he was going to come back. He showed me a lot getting up off the deck and staying in the game, and after he got that – he took that hit, he threw some balls that I don't think good NFL quarterbacks could have thrown. Penn State had some coverage on some plays that were big plays, and he threw the receivers open. I mean, I give him a lot of credit, and I do think that the one play that really, really really got them momentum and really had Penn State flat was the onside kick, which was really, really just brilliantly executed from the kick. The kicker kicks the ball just the right distance, taps the ball down so his teammate can get it, and they just jumped on him. So I think that Penn State's defense finally had to kind of go through a little bit of adversity, and they just didn't handle it all that well. And the sudden change after being out on the field and having to go back out, I thought cost them on a warm day. But again, this is, I think, a great learning moment and a great teaching moment, I think, for Penn State and the young players. For them to have responded, I think this will help this team down the road. I would say, Steve, it reminded me a little bit of what the 2016 team went through against Minnesota. It wasn't the same scenario, but that was a game where Minnesota was in control, except for it was earlier in the game, and Penn State kind of figured out a way to win that game in overtime, and they were a different team the rest of the way. Now, this game, it happened later in the game, but Penn State still responded the way that they did against Minnesota, and I think this could be a game where this, now this Penn State team knows in a close game that they can kind of punch back, and they're going to. I think they're going to be in. They should be in every one of their games now to the bitter end.
Yeah, to me, one of the parts of the learning curve is that they went up by two scores.
Yeah,
and at that point, you know that you can't relax. You have to then have the ability to just put the foot on the pedal and knock them out. And I think that's where youth shows up, because sometimes you think, okay, I've got this one, and then all of a sudden you realize you don't.
Right, right. And I do think that, I don't know what you and Jeff kind of felt like, but I didn't think that, I think they were breaking in so many new players on defense, especially in the secondary with both safeties. John Reed wasn't on the field, so they had to use some players at corner, maybe they don't use as much, and at linebacker in the nickel. I thought the coverages were for the most part, there were some blitzes, but they were pretty basic coverages, and I think that if the rush doesn't get home, I think that there were some plays that could be made by App State, and it turned out that way. I don't think you saw a very extremely sophisticated defensive game plan, and I think that was probably because of all the new faces, but I do look for a lot of different looks and a lot more improved play, I think, on the defensive side once they're healthy. Even a guy like Shane Simmons, I know he's not a starter, but, I mean, just not having him, not having Givens up front, I just thought that maybe some of those guys got a little bit tired there crunch time. And we'll see. I want to see what Penn State looks like in a couple of games when the freshmen are comfortable and the guys, you know, knock on wood, are pretty healthy. I think this still has a chance to be as good or better of a defense than last year's. And I know last year's defense was pretty good.
Yeah. In fact, there's always a domino effect. Like, for example, Givens not being in there in the opener. Daniel Joseph, who's very effective off the edge, they flipped him inside and played him in the four defensive end package. And for Daniel Joseph, he's not big enough to play that spot, but he was doing the best he could because that's what they needed from him. But he's not big enough to play that spot like Givens is.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the way that the game was going to about the 13-minute mark to play, I think Penn State thought that maybe they didn't have it under control, because I know that James preaches that, and he played to the whistle, played into the 60th minute no matter what. But I think that it even caught maybe some people on the sideline, maybe a little bit off guard by how quickly that game turned. Because you're right, when it got to be 24-10, then 31-17, when it got to be 31-17, you figure that was it. You figure, you know, now everything's got to go right for App State, and Penn State's got this one in control. And, you know, it couldn't have been further from the truth. It was remarkable how quickly that game flipped. And in App State's favor. You just don't see that at Beaver Stadium. You don't.
No, you're absolutely right, Bob. Now, what about Pitt? I mean, I know they played Albany in the opener, but there's still a body of work from last year to look at, too. What do you think of Pitt?
I am dying. I shouldn't say dying. I'm looking forward, Steve, to seeing that Pickett kid up close.
Yeah, me too.
I know it's only his third start, and I know Albany is not a world beater by any means, but I did see a lot of what he did against Miami in his first start, and I feel like, you know, in this day and age, if your dual threat quarterback can make plays in the clutch, sometimes it doesn't really matter what the defensive game plan is. You're almost at the mercy of their talents, and you see that with Trace so often. You saw what Iowa's very good defense at Iowa City. When he and Barkley and Juwan Johnson and Saeed Blacknell all got going on that final drive, there wasn't a lot that Iowa's defense could do, and I thought that was the case again against App State. I'm really, really interested to see Pickett. Reading up on Pitt coming out of spring, I know the buzz was they thought this was going to be maybe their best defense that Narduzzi's had, and to be granted, they haven't had great defenses prior to that. There's so many things to look forward to. I expect Penn State special teams to play much better, and I think that will really help, especially with field position and stuff like that. And I do feel like, you know, this Pickett and this McSorley battle, this is definitely going to be a fourth quarter game. And the thing that I think will really maybe swing this game is I want to see you know, who does what in the red zone. Last year when Penn State played Pitt, Pitt had the ball a long time, but they would move the ball between the 20s, but Penn State's defense was good, I thought, for the most part. The closer Pitt got to the Penn State goal line and they had to settle for some field goals and some things went awry, I think Penn State's defense in the red zone is one to watch. And also, Penn State was very good in the red zone offensively against Gap State. So I want to me, I think it's going to come down to which defense plays better in the red zone. But I also am I really think this Pickett kid could be really good. They haven't had a good quarterback at Pittsburgh for a little while. They're due. And when you see a kid that young making plays against a team like Miami, I think that this could be a really, really good game in the fourth quarter. I expect it to be. I know what the point spread is. I don't think that point spread is natural. Is really accurate. I don't know that I would buy that. I think this is a game that Penn State's going to have to dig in the fourth quarter to win it. And, you know, they had a chance to win it 2 years ago, Steve, even after they were down 28-7.
Yeah.
They were a play away, really a play away on two different occasions. Couldn't finish it, and I think it's going to be another one of those games. I really think Pitt really wants this game, and I think Penn State, after what happened against App State, I think you're going to see a much improved effort from Penn State on the road.
What would it mean to play with the lead in that atmosphere?
I think they have to. They definitely have to start fast. You know, it's one thing to say, so in the 2016 season, you know, they spot Pitt 28-7 on the road, and it was essentially a neutral site road game. They fall behind 28-7 to Wisconsin. And, you know, the odds of them coming back in both are just huge. And they don't have, on offense, you don't have the eraser anymore. You don't have Saquon Barkley, who, yes, you're going to see some negative yardage plays from him, but during the course of a game, he's going to do four or five things individually that you can't defend. And he can get you back in a game, you know, in two or three plays. He's that good. They don't really have that kind of running back yet, I think, on the roster. So I do think on the road, they cannot afford to fall behind Pittsburgh like they did 2 years ago. And I do think that, you know, they were pretty good last year, Steve, with Trey starting fast. And they were pretty good. They started the App State game fast as well. And that kick return really took the wind out of Penn State's hips. I think that if Penn State plays better on special teams and they can get some other guys involved on offense, and I'm talking about DeAndre Tompkins, maybe the tight end. Juwan Johnson was hot and cold, I thought, in the opener. He did some good things. I thought some things that were not so great. And obviously, I think Pitt is definitely aware of what K.J. Hamler can do, and maybe that'll open some things up for some other guys. But, yeah, if they come out of the first quarter with no points, I think they're going to be hard-pressed to win this game.
Bob, absolute pleasure. Look forward to seeing you down in Pittsburgh.
Okay. Take care, Steve. See you soon.
Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. We'll wrap it up in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
News Radio 1070 WKOK. We are Penn State.
Their corner throws for Sutton, knocked away, intercepted! Amani Oluwari of the Nittany Lions win it!
Saturday night, the Nittany Lions play at Pitt at Heinz Field. The tailgate show starts at 6:30 and kickoff is at 8.
Nittany Lions football on WKOK is sponsored in part by First National Insurance and Mifflinburg Auto Sales.
Great to have you with us. Closing down here for today, our thanks to Adam Bittner from Pittsburgh and Bob Flounders from the Patriot News and PennLive.com for joining us on the show today. Rich Scarcella joins us tomorrow. High School Roundtable tomorrow. The King tomorrow. Then on Friday, Lou Prado on the history of the Penn State-Pitt series. We'll have Lou on the show. Neil Coulong on the Steelers. So we have a lot going on. A lot going on. Audrey Snyder. Yeah. It's just another stoic state week here at the ballpark.
Already looking into next week. Donnie Collins will get a Penn State Pitt recap with you and Donnie on Monday.
Good. At some point we're going to get Mark Wogan, Rich, on too and talk with him.
We sure will.
Looking forward to that. The Red Sox have done more for the Phillies this week than the Phillies have done for themselves.
Two and a half games now behind the Braves.
Red Sox swept the Braves, down 7-1 today, rallied to win 9-8. The Red Sox are now 53 games over 500. That is mind-boggling. 53 games over 500. Huh? 53 games. That's amazing. And then they didn't even start Mookie Betts today. They didn't even start J.D. Martinez. Drew Pomeranz pitched, so that tells you everything. Still won. Wow.
It just makes you wonder which team in the National League would be able to beat them in a World Series.
The Cubs can. Yeah, the Cubs good. I picked one. But you know what? You got to get through so much to get there now. Division Series, American League Championship Series. The key for the Red Sox will be the health of David Price and Chris Sale. If Chris Sale is ready to pitch, you feel like you've got a game locked down, and Price has been pitching great.
It just makes you wonder, though, the suits at Fox, if they're concerned that the World Series will be a letdown, and like Boston-Houston would be a better series than the final one.
Or Boston-New York. Well, I mean, that's
not out of the realm of possibility.
Baseball's got to take a long, hard look at what they're doing. Long, hard look. And my solutions do not match up with the game. I think my solutions would make the game healthier, but there's so much money now flowing in all directions that they need to play 162 games. And you can't play baseball in Philadelphia in February.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.